Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
I had a choice to make. I could either start talking about Ketanji Brown Jackson, the Supreme Court Justice, discussing the idea that the First Amendment and the problem with it is that it might hamper the federal government from telling you what to say and think. Or a non-binary elementary school teacher that says that correcting people's grammar and syntax is white supremacist and racist. And it's at that moment I said, we should talk about puppies. Could you imagine this Sophie's Choice right here? Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. 833-GOT-TONY. 833-468-8669. You tell me what you want to talk about. I'll talk about that. These are our top stories. A Supreme Court justice that thinks that the problem with the First Amendment is what it does to the government. Or a teacher who dares call themselves non-binary like anybody gives a damn. Who wants to tell me that correcting people's grammar is improper. Now, we've often talked about the grammar police, and sometimes it'll be referred to as, what do they call it? The grammar Nazi? Sometimes you'll hear that.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Who doesn't? But it's white supremacist. It's bigoted. It's racist. You want to know why people turn off the news? This is it. And I don't want you to think for a second that this isn't as frustrating and maddening for me as it is for everybody else. This is exactly the everything that's a problem. You understand it's by design, right? I mean, I've got a couple of stories that I do want to get into today about Elon Musk, some things that happened regarding a piece of legislation regarding anti-Semitism. I'm going to get to a series of things here. And the phone number, 833-GOT-TONY. But this is exactly it. This is, if we want to understand what is happening to society, this is not a bug. This is the feature of progressivism, nay Marxism. This is exactly what the effort is. The effort is into trying to create a society that is in all ways mad and filled with madness. It is easier to get people to agree to things to get the madness to stop. And it is imperative that we note that this is by design. I use a service for audio clips, video clips, all sorts of things that I use on the show. And in the first four clips that I have, two of them are from the same story. Here's what I've got. I'm reading it directly right in front of me. I have got this non-binary elementary school teacher correcting people's grammar and syntax as white supremacist and racist. Now, I haven't listened to it first, so I don't know if there's any like four-letter words into it. So I'm not gonna play it. I have to listen to it first. Sometimes I love to hear things, you know, just raw, just when you do, and be able to comment on them. Then I have a Biden advisor telling me that we're managing the green transition by limiting liquid natural gas exports. And luckily, we should be thankful for how low gas prices are.
Doing all of this at the same time, we're managing our energy transition by making sure prices are lower. Natural gas prices are $1.70 here. That is very low. Gasoline prices are lower than they are in Europe and wherever else. Cost of manufacturing has gone down as a result. Our inflation has gone down as a result. And we're making these other investments. When it comes to the LNG pause, they all were concerned. they definitely had a concern is the United States stepping off the scene as our supplier instead of Russia.
And that's the White House energy advisor who wants to tell you inflation's down and gas prices are down. Inflation is up. It's lower than Europe, so everything's okay. We're going to put a pause on exporting liquefied natural gas, which means nations in Europe are going to get it from where? Russia. Is this what we want? So we are now going to allow them to fund Russia, which is invading Ukraine, and we are funding Ukraine to fight against Russia. Who's our friend here? And then there's The View. I couldn't make this up. Their guest is Christine Blasey Ford. Oh, you remember the name. Christine Blasey Ford is the one who made the accusation against Brett Kavanaugh when he was up for the position on the Supreme Court. He did this, he did that. It was a party. This happened, that happened. There was no party. No one remembered the party. Nobody went to the party. Nobody can corroborate her story, and neither can she. She's the guest on The View.
Well, you've been called a highly credible witness, and you have a PhD in psychology. You're a professor. You teach at Palo Alto and Stanford universities. But even today, some people remain skeptical of your story. And you write that during the hearing, Senator Lindsey Graham wouldn't even make eye contact with you. Were you prepared for that kind of response?
I was prepared ahead of time that that none of the Republicans were going to speak with me, and they were going to use an outside interviewer. Mm-hmm. And so I was actually surprised at how kind some of the other Republican senators were who broke that protocol and said hello.
Who was that? Can you name a good one?
Senator Flake and Senator Sass both came over and said hello.
Neither one's gone in Congress anymore, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. But still, a credit.
Yeah, good for them.
Both good men, yeah.
My gosh, there was actually a polite Republican. Name the names! This is a news story? By the way, Christine Blasey Ford is in no way credible. I believe absolutely no part of her story whatsoever. I think she made it all up. Now, these are three of the things that are being shared with this news service that I utilize. Hey, here's some stuff you should be talking about. Here's some stuff going on. The View trying to rehabilitate a woman who tried to destroy a potential Supreme Court justice with no facts. A Biden advisor lying about the state of inflation, and a teacher who thinks that this is their moment to shine as opposed to actually educating kids. You know, there's a reason people drink bourbon. Madness on madness on madness. How does one react and respond to this? Well, what happens is that people, they shut it off. Click. Shut off the TV, shut off the radio, put down the web. Click. That's part of the plan. That's part of the idea. Tune out. Don't engage. Get isolated. That's part of the desire. Now, I think that the way to combat that is first recognize that one cannot be all politics all the time. You will go nuts. One cannot be all angry all the time. Angry at everything for the purpose of what? For what value? It's like the Oscars. Don't get me wrong. I didn't watch the Oscars. I did pay attention to things that were said at the Oscars. Some people are like, oh, I would never watch it. I don't even watch these movies. They're all terrible. They're not all terrible. If you take yourself out from movies, and then there are the people who will tell you, oh, you can't watch sports. You got to take yourself out from sports. Now, what do I do? There's this move on the political right in response to the madness from the political left to extract oneself from all of the things. That is no way to live. That's nuts. Again, a bit by design, and also in many ways from the political right, my political right, not a bit, but rather reactionary. And I don't recommend it. You don't extricate yourself from higher education. You demand better from higher education, and you start becoming teachers. Same thing is true in secondary education. You don't extract yourself from culture and say, I don't want to be a part of movies. You start making movies. And good ones, not ones where people wave the flag. Good movies. You further engage it. But you got to ebb and flow. It can't be all anger all the time. But wow, what a day when this is what you got to start with. And of course, I can eschew all this and just go right to the fact that I've got a Supreme Court justice that doesn't think that the First Amendment is worthwhile. Ah! Oh, this is exactly why people drink bourbon. I wasn't planning on going in this direction. I do have a ton to get to, but I wanted to start in a place where we're all on the same page, right? These people are nuts, and they're trying to make it crazier. That is their plan. I don't want to be a part of their plan. But I want to recognize what they're doing so we know how to combat it. These people are crazy. And now people are texting me, enjoy more cigars, sip more bourbon, eat the best food. That is a good way to deal with these things. That is a good way to deal with these things. It's why I have a show called Eat, Drink, Smoke, eatdrinksmokeshow.com. But it's one needs a hobby. One needs a step away. They, by design, push madness in every corner. Every single corner. Every single day, more and more madness. And tomorrow they'll come out with something you never heard of before, and they'll say, this is the most important thing, and they'll just add it to the list. Create confusion, create anger, create anxiety, create hostility. It is a tough thing to fight when it's coming at you from every corner of culture and politics and everything else. But I think sometimes it's important to know and to be aware of, this is what they're doing. This is who they are. It makes our job more difficult. I get it. It makes our job more difficult. But our job is to not be overwhelmed by them. It's to pick our spots, to fight back properly. And if we could win some elections, that would also be great. All without losing our souls. Again, I recommend the bourbon. I'm Tony Katz.
But more importantly, the message about the American brand. You think about America, the reason this is the number one economy on earth is that we have laws and we have due process and we have property rights. It attracts foreign capital from all around the world. All of that is being shaken to the core here. The concept of seizing assets in 30 days on a bond number that's never been issued. No insurance bond company's ever issued anything near this. So it was no chance it was going to happen. And only giving 30 days notice and time, that's a really bad message. And I think New Yorkers should think well past Trump, whether he's president or not, or whether this attorney general is gone in 4 years or not, it's irrelevant. This is case setting against the American brand.
Interesting take from Kevin O'Leary. He's over there on Fox News. This has to do with the, it's not settlement, it's the judgment, that's the word I'm looking for, against Donald Trump for $464 million. For what? I don't know. Well, he got favorable terms on a loan. Oh, is that right? He got favorable terms on loans, and did he pay the loans back? Oh, yeah. And the banks were fine with it? Oh, sure. And there was no actual harm done? Oh, no. So why is there a judgment against him? Well, because he's Trump, and Trump bad, orange man. Orange man bad. Fascists have to find him guilty because that's what all my progressive friends want me to do, so I'll get invited to the Christmas party. And that's what happened. Letitia James ran on this, the Attorney General of New York. Ran on getting Trump. That's how people run for office these days. not on, you know, being fair, not on following the Constitution. They run now on let's get him. That's not valuable. Did I say hello, Tony Katz? Tony Katz today. Good to be with you. Well, Trump was told that you have to pay this. So in order to pay this, he's trying to post bond. Trying to post a bond. Can't. Because nobody's prepared to do a $464 million bond. So he's got till Monday. What happens if he doesn't do it? The Attorney General, Letitia James, then goes to the judge and says, I'm going to start taking his properties. Taking the properties. Now, I think he's looking for an appeal, a whole host of things. He wants the delay to take place. According to a court filing, Trump's team has been turned away by approximately 30 surety companies through four separate brokers. And he's been informed that obtaining a bond is, quote, not possible under the circumstances presented. They're going to take the buildings. That's what's going to happen. They're going to take the buildings. And there are these savage nonsense New Yorkers who are going to cheer when they pull the name Trump off of Trump Tower. Ah, yeah, we got him. You understand that those people, all those cheering and all those doing this, they have never done anything. You picture that scenario and you realize that Atlas Shrugged is a really good book. The people who have never done anything go after the people who create everything. You don't like Trump? I don't care. Doesn't mean anything to me. I sleep like a baby. I didn't say you couldn't hate him. I'm saying I don't get bothered by whether or not you like him or not. But one thing is for sure, he created things. He created jobs. He created a tax base. Oh, he was a terrible boss and he screwed over this one, screwed over that one. I have absolutely no doubt. Also, by the way, so did your mom. What? I just assumed your mom was a business owner and may have actually screwed somebody over. There are plenty of people who work with plenty of other people who feel that they have been slighted by that person. And I have absolutely no doubt that Trump has people who he didn't even pay what he said he was going to pay, or he didn't pay at all. Of course it happened. I concede. You know what else I concede? Trump created jobs, homes, and a tax base. You know what Letitia created, Letitia James? Not a damn thing. Cynthia Nixon is an actress, Sex and the City, and a vehement progressive communist. You know what she has actually built? Nothing compared to Trump. She didn't even create the show which she was an actress in, so I can't necessarily give her credit for whatever jobs were created in New York City regarding the show Sex and the City. Trump created the backdrop that Sex and the City used to be a hit. When New York City couldn't fix the Wallman skating rink, they couldn't fix an ice skating rink, they put in crazy money, they couldn't figure out how to freeze the damn water, Trump said, I got it. And he fixed it, and he fixed it under budget. Here you go. Here's a skating rink. Have a nice day. They hate him. They despise him. They want to destroy him. All the things. Look, there are reasons not to vote for the man. I'm not telling you no. But there was no crime here. He got favorable terms from a bank because he overinflated his numbers. The bank should have done better due diligence. He paid back every loan. And the banks were thrilled to be in business with Donald Trump. Thrilled. Overjoyed. Delighted. You know how many times they said, oh, we funded Trump's last deal. We can handle your little paltry real estate project. A $464 million judgment is obscene. And no, he can't get the bond. And this is what they want. They want to take his name off the buildings and go, ha ha, we showed him. What they showed is America. I'm Tony Katz.
Justice Jackson?
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. What would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done. And so I guess... some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country.
That's Ketanji Brown Jackson, Supreme Court Justice, in a case that came before the court yesterday that, well, has a lot of people scratching their head. Tony Katz today, 833-468-8669, 833-GOT-TONY. That's the number. This is a case that came from Louisiana saying that the idea that people were prevented from speaking out about COVID-19 vaccines was the government violating the free speech rights of social media users. This judge, Terry Doughty, agreed, issued an order that limited communications between the White House and several other government agencies with social media platforms. U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit upholds Doughty's order, but says, no, we're not going to say all these agencies. CDC, FBI, White House, that's it. They have to limit their interactions. The Biden administration says, hey, maybe you don't know who we are. We're the Biden administration. And just in case we forgot, you're the Biden administration. Maybe you don't know who we are because we're the Biden administration. And how do I get off this stage? I'm very confused at this. Jill? That's basically what they said right there. This goes to the Supreme Court. This is an argument and a conversation about whether or not the federal government has a role to play in the limiting of conversation. I think that we can go back in history and see instances where maybe the federal government said to some outlet, hey, please don't print this. This is going to hurt us with national security. Give us 2 days. Please don't print this because this will hurt us here. I would argue that is happened. The federal judge in Louisiana agreed that federal officials had violated the First Amendment by, quote, coercing, unquote, or significantly encouraging content moderation of social media platforms. This would be different than a newspaper publication because, well, we don't see the platforms in the same way. I have the right to discuss whether or not the COVID-19 vaccine is of any value, whether I took it or not, how I think other people should deal with it. And certainly, one could argue that doctors could have a conversation here and have thoughts. What happened instead was we were told that the only doctor who mattered was Dr. Fauci, who actually had the audacity to tell us, I am the science. People forget that. They forget that Fauci actually said those words. I am science. You can't even make that up. The level of just ugly and insanity there. And this is also a guy who said that lockdowns were justified. And I know people like their freedoms and all that. garbage. Right? They all love their freedoms, but you know what? Your freedoms, they don't really matter as much. And that, of course, is insane. But this is the only doctor we got to listen to? This is the only doctor that was acceptable? That's nonsense. Doctors should have been listened to. And some doctors may have had a different view. We call that a second opinion. That's what we call it. And by the way, for the people who are like, oh, Tony, he never said, Dr. Fauci never said, I am science.
It's easy to criticize, but they're really criticizing science. You're really attacking not only Dr. Anthony Fauci, you're attacking science.
I'm the bad guy to an entire subset of people because I represent something that is uncomfortable for them. It's called the truth.
I'm just saying. He said what he said, and he did what he did. Plenty of people that should have had a say, and they didn't. This case goes to the Supreme Court. It's Murthy versus Missouri is the name of the case, by the way. It's a challenge to the Biden administration's coordination with big tech to engage in censorship. And it was indeed censorship. The White House says, well, what we were trying to do was stop misinformation. Now, you know as well as I know that this misinformation conversation is nonsense. The people who scream about misinformation are the people who desire to control your speech. And that's why they call it misinformation. When you say it, it's misinformation. When they say it, it's valuable and important. They believe they can utilize this terminology to keep things from you or to stop you from bringing things to the fore. It is as Orwellian and obscene as anything else out there. Misinformation. Misinformation is when you tell me Lizzo is beautiful. That's misinformation. Misinformation is when you tell me that Alec Baldwin is level-headed. That's misinformation. Everybody knows those two things ain't true. Although I'm sure you can find somebody out there who thinks Lizzo is beautiful and someone who thinks that Alec Baldwin is level-headed. For me to note that Lizzo is not attractive, for me to note that Alec Baldwin is not level-headed, doesn't make me a bigot. It doesn't make me guilty of misinformation. I can say these things. You might not think that they're nice things, right? You don't have to think that they're nice things, but they can still be said. But what Ketanji Brown Jackson said was a whole bit different. And it's funny, I had brought this up on the show yesterday, but we were moving, and I did not take a second to go, wait a second, what did she say here?
Justice Jackson?
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways.
Do I care whether the government is hamstrung? I'm asking the justice, do I care whether the government is hamstrung? Now I'm asking you, do you care? What do I care if the First Amendment is rough on the government? Isn't that the point? These are the rights of the people. The government has to do everything within these borders, and the people, they have the rights. They can say what they want. The government, not necessarily. She doubled down on this.
Well, whether or not the government can do this, this is something I took up with Mr. Fletcher, depends on the application of our First Amendment jurisprudence, and there may be circumstances in which the government could prohibit certain speech on the internet or otherwise. I mean, do you disagree that we would have to apply strict scrutiny and determine whether or not there is a compelling interest and how the government has tailored its regulation?
Certainly, Your Honor. I think at the end of every First Amendment analysis, you'll have the strict scrutiny framework in which, you know, in some national security hypos, for example, the government may well be able to demonstrate a compelling interest, may well be able to demonstrate.
All right. So not every situation will in which the government engages in conduct that ultimately has some effect on speech necessarily becomes a First Amendment violation, correct?
Maybe not necessarily, Your Honor. I guess the top line question I would ask is, has the government set out to abridge the freedom of speech? And in this case, you see that time and time again, because if you control
that's not the test for First Amendment violations.
Your Honor, this flows from the plain text of the First Amendment, right?
No, I understand, but we have a test for a determination of whether or not the First Amendment is actually violated. So in certain situations, the government can actually require that speech be suppressed if there's a compelling interest, right?
It can, Your Honor, and I guess what I would say is that the courts below never got to strict scrutiny because the government never raised this. This has never been litigated. The question in this case is whether at the front end the government itself has undertaken
action. It's the coercion. It's the state action, right? That's the question in this case.
And I would urge the court to address the state action issue just like you addressed it in Bantam Books. Use that term four times in Bantam Books.
I mean, and could just to understand, because it seems like
they move on from there. It's a real argument she's making. Well, the government does have this right. If we want to argue this to be true, and I would argue that there could be situations where it is indeed true. I am, as a matter of course, am a free speech absolutist. There is nothing that could be said here that could make me think that people cannot engage. I would argue that there could be places where that engagement is of threat that could make one ask whether or not the government has the right to say no. I am doing what I think very few others are even attempting. I'm trying to understand the position. For example, I believe the government is allowed to have secrets. I believe we elect people to go about running the country so we can go about our lives, because who the bloody heck wants to do the other stuff? And in the course of running the government, there will be secrets and there will be things that they know and we don't. Certainly on an intelligence side, on a military side, I am okay with this. As a matter of fact, I'm not quite sure how it is supposed to run without this. And I can see a situation where the government says, don't share this. Do not put this information out. You think a doctor disagreeing on COVID vaccines? You think that's the issue? You think that's the place where the government gets to say, no, you can't do that? We didn't say, hey, I have got the blueprints to all of our fighter jets, and if the Chinese had this, they would build their own and they'd be able to destroy ours. Like using that as just some kind of movie-esque, a Bourne identity example. And someone's saying, no, you can't publish that. That in and of itself is a crime. We're not going to allow that to be published. You would argue that that is a far cry from a doctor saying, listen, I don't think they're doing this analysis properly. It's a funny thing about the people who scream, I am the science. It's not exact. We all know that what we first heard from COVID and what we knew from COVID a month later, what we knew from COVID 6 months later, and what we knew from COVID a year later changed. We started to really learn about things like comorbidities. Oh, you mean the fat people have a problem? The fat people are dying. The elderly are dying. Look at these kids. Healthy as horses. We weren't allowed to note that. We weren't allowed to note that people who got certain vaccines, there seemed to be a level of correlation with myocarditis or other heart issues. We couldn't say that? That's an argument. And I think a bad one. And I would be someone who even looks at the government and says maybe they have the ability to, in certain situations, to, sorry, if I got a rule, I'm ruling with the people. I'm ruling with their ability to engage amongst themselves. Absolutely I am. But the idea that the First Amendment hamstrings the government, that is a haunting, haunting statement. You know, it was Barack Obama years ago who stated that his problem with the Constitution is what is that it was a grouping of negative charters. It says what the government cannot do to you as opposed to what government must do for you. I always thought that was the damn point. It's about what the government cannot do to you. Because government is not the center of our world. We are the center of our world. And it seems that Ketanji Brown Jackson ascribes herself or subscribes to that Barack Obama theory of that we need to talk about what the government must do for you as opposed to what the government cannot do to you. And I would always side on what the government cannot do to you. Thus, I wouldn't allow the government to curtail speech. That's how I flow through the argument. I don't know what you do. Let me know on X at Tony Katz. Keep it here. Vegas, baby. Heading out to Vegas in a couple of days. A cigar show. Going on out there. It's called the Premium Cigar Association. It's their trade show. And I'm going to go try new things and talk to people and smoke everything. I am there for 3 nights. I think I have 5 reservations already set. We got Gordon Ramsay's place. Hugo Cellar, which is a tradition. If you've never been on Fremont Street in the basement of the Four Queens, It's a rough spot, but Hugo Cellar is special. I think we're hitting Giada's place at the Cromwell. Oh, yeah. When in Rome, people. My advice, do cool things. Do cool things and have fun. That is the plan. Meanwhile, the kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's going to have you being a Chiefs fan in a matter of moments. I'll share that with you coming up. This is Tony Katz Today.